This is InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's what's happening on this week's show.
Millions of Americans rely on Social Security as a financial lifeline. But will the funds be there when you need them? A possible 21% cut in Social Security may happen in less than a decade.
It's been very clear for decades that the Social Security Trust Fund was going to be depleted, and we really just have not done anything to solve that.
Then, America's poison control centers have seen a radical shift in poisoning incidents that may surprise you.
We're seeing a growing mental health crisis in the pediatric population, intentional overdoses with acetaminophen, Benadryl, and other products for depression.
Those two interviews and more are ahead on this week's InfoTrack. Stay with us. The show gets underway right after this.
As part of summer's greatest hits, it's the first ever Macy's All-Star Week. Join us for an incredible lineup of live events in-store every day, like fashion shows, beauty demos, and more fun for the family. Now through Tuesday, July 23rd. Plus, shop our best summer deals, like 50% off swim, sandals, and more. And exclusives just for Star Rewards members. You don't want to miss this. Go to Macy's.com/events to see what's at your local store. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Ugh, kitchen ants, runaway roaches, a spider! Relax, just use Zevo. Zevo bug sprays use essential oils to eliminate those pests and up to 20 household insects. Plus, Zevo is safe for use around people and pets when used as directed. Just spritz the bugs and wipe them away. Zevo, people friendly, bug deadly.
Summer's just getting started, so fill your cooler with the smooth and refreshing taste of Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea. It tastes like real iced tea because it's made with real brewed tea. And with a 5% kick of alcohol, Twisted Tea is perfect for the beach, the lake, or wherever you're hanging out and day drinking with your friends. Look for the bright yellow cans. Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea. Keep it twisted.
Twisted Tea Brewing Company, Cincinnati, Ohio. Please drink responsibly.
What's wrong?
My travel rewards card didn't earn enough miles for my vacation.
Are you crying? Are you crying because of that other credit card?
Uh-huh.
Well, switch to the Capital One Venture card. Venture lets you redeem miles on any travel purchase.
Really?
Yep, and you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every single day. The Capital One Venture card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
InfoTrack, the weekly show with information you should know. Here's your host, Chris Whitting.
For millions of older Americans, Social Security is vital. But in less than 10 years, the funds may be reduced, and younger workers may see cuts when they retire. Here with the story, InfoTrack's Gina Tedesco. Gina?
Thanks, Chris. Joining us now is Alicia Monell, the Peter F. Drucker Professor of Management Sciences at Boston College's Carroll School of Management. She also serves as director of the Center for Retirement Research at Boston College. Professor, the Social Security Trustee Report discusses the Old Age and Survivor Program meant mostly for retirees, and separately, the Disability Benefit Program. So first, regarding the retiree program, the report says that portion of Social Security is not backsliding or becoming less solvent, at least per the depletion date?
The OSI, the retirement portion, hasn't changed very much. It stays in the early 30s. I don't think that you want to argue very much about going 1 year one way or the other. So the outlook really has not changed a lot.
And when you say the 30s, you're talking about
the 2030s, early 2030s. 2033 is where it is now.
That is the projected depletion date, but help us understand this, because the word depletion does not mean what it may sound like, that the retirement system is broke. Can you explain that?
I'm so happy that you put it that way. That's absolutely correct, because sometimes it sounds like all benefits are going to stop, but that's not right. The money coming in through the payroll tax will be enough to pay 75% of benefits. And so we don't want to see a 25% benefit cut, but no one is talking about the payouts going to zero.
And we used to have 68 years to fix Social Security. I was just mindful of that. And now it's only 9 years before depletion?
I mean, that's sort of the sad part of the story, is that it's been very clear for decades that the Social Security Trust Fund was going to be depleted somewhere around the next 10 years. And we really just have not done anything to solve that problem and to wait off this impending crisis.
And what's the outlook for the disability benefit program? Is that solvent?
It looks awfully good these days. The incidence of disability seems to be going down. I have a colleague who's looked at the reasons for that, and then that has a lot to do with a very strong job market. So no one's worried about that portion.
And it's tougher to qualify, is it not? Did they not change those rules as well?
Sure, they've made it tougher, but it is so tough to qualify that I'm surprised anybody can get on it.
But are the disability funds in the same pot, so to speak, as the retirement funds? And how does that affect solvency, if it does?
They're in very different funds, and to put them together would require legislation. And so even with the DI fund, the disability fund, merged in with the retirement fund, you only gain a year or two. So it's not worth going to a lot of trouble to do that. But you, at the current moment, the action forcing event is the exhaustion of the resources in the retirement fund.
Now, you say Congress must act to avoid what you've called draconian cuts in benefits, and you laid out three issues. First, whether to invest a portion of the trust fund in equities, such as the stock market. So what percentage of the trust fund and what kind of equities might be involved?
So this is sort of one portion, one way to fix the funding gap. So one option is to invest a portion of the trust fund revenues in equities. And so you don't want Congress picking companies or picking locations. You would invest it in some sort of Dow Jones index or some broad-based index. And you would invest, you know, only a portion of the funds, going up to maybe 40%. If we had done it in the past, we would not be facing exhaustion now. Right now, it's a little trickier maneuver because, as you point out, the trust fund is going to zero. So we don't have a trust fund. And to build up another trust fund quickly would require some effort. And so it's an option that I've always favored, but the possibility of taking advantage of it is sort of disappearing.
We're visiting with Alicia Monell, a Boston College professor, regarding a report on Social Security. It calls for Congress to act quickly to avoid what's called draconian benefit cuts. Professor, is there a growing belief that the current system of investing in the U.S. Treasury securities is really not sustainable for Social Security?
Social Security is best thought of as a program that operates on a pay-as-you-go basis. Basically, the money that comes in through the payroll tax this year, all of it goes out to pay benefits. So we're talking about having a trust fund there, basically in case of downturns in the economy, sort of a buffer to ensure that you can make the payments on time. So you don't need a huge trust fund, maybe twice the level of average benefit outlays. And I think it works fine in terms of investing in the bonds that we do. It would give the system a chance to earn some money if some of it were invested in equities. It's not a guarantee. Equities come with greater risk. But to the extent that it was successful, it would require less of a tax increase or a benefit cut to restore balance.
And a second issue to consider is having future generations bear more burden to shore up Social Security. Does that mean they'd pay more into the system, get less benefits, or both?
As you pointed out, we have known for a long time that the trust fund was going to be depleted. And if we had made our changes in, let's say, the 1990s, there are late boomers or mid-boomers that would have contributed to solving the problem. As it has emerged, those people are all going to be retired, and more of the burden will be placed on the current generations of workers.
And how much more might they have to pay under current conditions, do you believe? And I know this is a guess.
Oh, maybe 1% of payroll. The current tax is about 10.6%. And so it would be 10% more than they would have had to pay otherwise.
Now, a third issue that you bring up is whether there's an automatic adjustment system to keep Social Security solvent. If Congress acts sooner rather than later, what advantages would that produce? Obviously, solvency, but what else?
I think it's very important that whatever we do, whatever options we select to restore balance to Social Security, that we add an automatic adjustment mechanism to that package so that if in the future we see deficits arising again and Congress does not act, then we do something automatic that does something on the benefit side, maybe freezes the COLA, does something on the tax side, sort of raises the tax rate somewhat until balance is restored. I think if we had that kind of automatic adjustment mechanism, people would just be able to exhale and say, okay, the program's good as far as we can see.
And one of the advantages would be that it keeps more options open. Is that fair to say?
Yes. First of all, it relieves anxiety. But second, Congress will know that something is going to happen, even if they don't act. And so I think it might force people to the table to get the preferred options rather than just sitting back and allowing us to get right up to the precipice.
Professor Alicia Minnell of Boston College, thank you very much for your insights into the Social Security Trustees Report.
Delighted to be here.
For InfoTrack, I'm Gina Tedesco.
Next, accidental poisoning and prevention. That story coming up.
You're listening to InfoTrack. More after this.
As part of summer's greatest hits, it's the first ever Macy's All-Star Week. Join us for an incredible lineup of live events in-store every day, like fashion shows, beauty demos, and more fun for the family. Now through Tuesday, July 23rd. Plus, shop our best summer deals, like 50% off swim, sandals, and more. And exclusives just for Star Rewards members. You don't want to miss this. Go to Macy's.com/events to see what's at your local store. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Ugh, kitchen ants, runaway roaches, a spider! Relax, just use Zevo. Zevo bug sprays use essential oils to eliminate those pests and up to 20 household insects. Plus, Zevo is safe for use around people and pets when used as directed. Just spritz the bugs and wipe them away. Zevo, people friendly, bug deadly.
Summer's just getting started, so fill your cooler with the smooth and refreshing taste of Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea. It tastes like real iced tea because it's made with real brewed tea. And with a 5% kick of alcohol, Twisted Tea is perfect for the beach, the lake, or wherever you're hanging out and day drinking with your friends. Look for the bright yellow cans. Twisted Tea Hard Iced Tea. Keep it twisted.
Twisted Tea Brewing Company, Cincinnati, Ohio. Please drink responsibly.
What's wrong?
My travel rewards card didn't earn enough miles for my vacation.
Are you crying? Are you crying because of that other credit card?
Uh-huh.
Well, switch to the Capital One Venture card. Venture lets you redeem miles on any travel purchase.
Really?
Yep, and you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every single day. The Capital One Venture card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
America's poison centers are fielding increasingly severe cases, and you might be surprised at the reasons why. Christopher Holsteg, MD, is director of the University of Virginia Health System's Blue Ridge Poison Center and chief of the Division of Medical Toxicology at UVA's School of Medicine. Dr. Holsteg, before we get to your findings, can you define what sorts of poisoning cases this trend includes for adults and for children? Because I would presume they differ.
Yeah, they do differ. And we actually saw this in our clinical practice at the University of Virginia as we were fielding calls with the 55 or so healthcare facilities that we cover. But if you look at what some of the substances that we'll see with adults, for example, we certainly started to see heroin, for example, and other opioids starting to come up on the list, causing issues for increased severity of outcomes as well as death, which shouldn't surprise anybody with the data that you've been hearing about in the media. The pediatric population, on the other hand, was a bit interesting to see what some of the trend changes were. There's some drugs that are common out there that pediatrics actually uses in adults, a drug called clonidine, for example, and for children, acetaminophen. But some things emerged, such as bupropion, which is a substance that's used for smoking cessation, it's been used for depression. That really emerged in the last 7 years or so.
And children are getting access to that?
Yeah, if you look at intentional and unintentional, we're seeing kids getting into some of these substances, but certainly the intentional exposures, we're seeing acetaminophen being the number one agent, and then bupropion and diphenhydramine come in number two and number three in the last few years.
Tell us some of the other highlights of your study.
It's about watching the prevalence, or what do we see the increases so we can look at our prevention activities. And as I said, we started to see more severity of outcomes. If you think about the poison centers in the past, they really were developed for the pediatric population so that when parents had exposures with their kids, they could stay at home and not necessarily go in. They could talk to someone at the poison center, 90% of the calls coming from the home, we could say, no, that exposure is actually safe to stay at home and not incur additional time going to an emergency department and not incurring more cost. However, we started to see a decline in the calls. This may be in part due to individuals using search engines to take a look and trying to get information. But then what we started to also see was the complexity of the calls coming to the poison centers was getting more severe. And so if you look at, for example, unintentional exposures that were occurring with severity of harm increasing or death, that increased, really doubled over this time period. And during the time period, you know, there's 33.7 million calls into poison centers. So there's a lot of calls coming in to the 55 poison centers in the United States. It was intriguing to see some of the differences between the adults and the children, with, again, the opioid crisis certainly picking up in the adults, whereas children, we're seeing some of the new substances coming into play that kids might get into, but also we're seeing a growing mental health crisis in the pediatric population, such that we're seeing intentional overdoses with acetaminophen, diphenhydramine, which is in Benadryl, for example, and other products for depression, for example.
I believe you found that there has not been a corresponding increase in critical care unit admissions despite these more severe cases. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, there may be a number of reasons why that is. Part of it may be the hospitals and the availability of beds. Some of these cases will come in severe and the emergency departments are actually monitoring them and managing them, and they're able to discharge them at the end of the time period. And I think we see that to some extent at the University of Virginia too, where they come in severe, but given enough time, appropriate management, they recover. And it partially depends on the elimination half-life of the substance they were exposed to.
I realize that the long-term trend has been up, but how has the COVID-19 pandemic affected the trends in poison exposures and healthcare resource allocations?
We actually did another study that pertained to specifically looking at the trends in the pediatric population, for example, looking to see for mental health, were there more suicide attempts? We certainly saw an increase before the pandemic. There was a steady increase in intentional overdoses in increasingly young individuals. However, after the pandemic, we saw that escalate significantly, especially in younger age groups, even when you start looking at kids who are in the 10 to 12-year-old age group, where I would say 20 years ago in my practice, I never saw children who were 10, 11, 12 years of age intentionally trying to commit suicide. Now we're starting to see those cases, and our data actually showed that. And that really, again, highlights the mental health crisis we have in our youth population.
There's another surprising aspect of this trend, and that's carbon monoxide?
Correct. And the unintentional adult exposures, that has ranked number one since 2007. And it's the importance of having a carbon monoxide detector in the home to prevent that. But that is by far the number one agent for the unintentional exposures that have led to severe outcomes.
Is there anything that you think needs to change in terms of public health policy and maybe prevention strategies?
We still, as a society, need to continue to do the efforts that we've had in the past in prevention. We certainly don't want toddlers to get into substances. For example, we've seen the decriminalization of cannabis in Virginia. One of the substances that came up in the toddler or younger age groups, the unintentional, was actually cannabis products that led to more severity of outcomes. So we want to be really careful on, you know, how our young children, toddlers, are getting into things and doing prevention efforts in those areas and really educating the adults. More needs to be done in taking a look at the mental health crisis in youth. When you see such large jumps in intentional overdoses or suicide attempts in our pediatric populations, that should be a growing concern, and it has been for our population. In the adult population, we certainly want to try to address the opioid crisis. There's many different initiatives underway to try to impact that, but that has been escalating and continuing to escalate despite some of those efforts.
Are there any takeaway messages in your research for the public about poisoning cases?
Part of it depends on the substances that we're looking at. If we look again at the pediatric unintentional exposures, we see the marijuana edibles, the cannabis edibles, as number four. That certainly should encourage us to look at more prevention efforts, how those are being marketed. We don't want those marketed looking like candies to children. We also are seeing some of the opioids that are used for prevention that we think about with maintenance, methadone, buprenorphine. In the pediatric age group, the same thing. We need to be careful as to what access children have to those. And as we look at acetaminophen as being the number one product for years for intentional overdoses, we may as a society have to start taking a look at how do we market those? How do we sell bottles? Do we sell these massive bottles of acetaminophen products? Some countries, such as Britain, have gone to blister packs such that it's much harder for someone who is intentionally, such as in a suicide attempt, taking medications to be able to pop out a large number to cause an overdose and significant toxicity. So there are some things that we can learn from other countries too.
And finally, do you have any parting words of advice for parents in regards to both mental health and preventing poisoning incidents with their kids?
Yeah, I think we need to be very careful on what's left out. With young children around, be careful with alternative therapies, cannabis, ethanol or alcohol products, household cleaners. Some of these things we've had messages for years, but realize the toddlers are very quick and get into these, especially if they look like food. And certainly with the teenage populations where we're worried about suicide attempts, being careful where we store medications, how large medication supplies we have are also important in the household for prevention strategies.
Dr. Christopher Holsteg, MD, Director of the University of Virginia Health System's Blue Ridge Poison Center, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.
As part of summer's greatest hits, it's the first ever Macy's All-Star Week. Join us for an incredible lineup of live events in-store every day, like fashion shows, beauty demos, and more fun for the family. Now through Tuesday, July 23rd. Plus, shop our best summer deals, like 50% off swim, sandals, and more. And exclusives just for Star Rewards members. You don't want to miss this. Go to Macy's.com/events to see what's at your local store. Savings off already reduced prices. Exclusions apply.
Ugh, kitchen ants, runaway roaches, a spider! Relax, just use Zevo. Zevo bug sprays use essential oils to eliminate those pests and up to 20 household insects. Plus, Zevo is safe for use around people and pets when used as directed. Just spritz the bugs and wipe them away. Zevo, people friendly, bug deadly.
Brain diseases, including Parkinson's, are now the leading cause of disability. Is enough research being done on prevention? Here with the story, InfoTrack's Roy Mackey. Roy?
Thank you, Chris. We're joined by Dr. Ray Dorsey. He is the David M. Levy Professor of Neurology and Director of the Center for Health and Technology at the University of Rochester Medical Center. He's also one of the co-authors of Ending Parkinson's Disease, A Prescription for Action. Dr. Dorsey, let's start with maybe a bit of a primer for those who may not know everything there is to know about Parkinson's disease. Tell us a bit about the disease and the typical effects of it.
Sure. So Parkinson's disease is now the world's fastest growing brain disorder, faster growing than even than Alzheimer's disease. Over the past 25 years, the number of individuals who've been affected by the disease worldwide has more than doubled. And absent change, it'll double again the coming 25 years. Parkinson's disease is classically considered a neurological or brain disorder, and its key features are a tremor or shaking in the hands, usually worse on one side than the other, slowness in movement, stiffness, and difficulties with gait or balance. The disease is more common as we age, and as we'll probably discuss, it has numerous environmental factors that contribute to its rise.
Is there a typical age when Parkinson's is first diagnosed?
It's rare but not unheard of before age 50. About 4 to 5% of people have it before age 50, maybe a little bit more. It increases such that about 1% of people at 65 and 3% of people at 85 have the disease. And again, it's the fastest growing brain disorder in the world.
And why do you believe it is on the upswing?
Aging obviously contributes to it because the disease unfolds over decades. Much like smoking and lung cancer, you don't smoke a cigarette and then develop lung cancer. You need many decades of cumulative exposure and time for the disease to develop. And as we live longer, more and more of us will have time to manifest the classic symptoms of the disease, such as tremor and difficulty with balance and walking. Some of the early symptoms can begin decades before the tremor appears, for example, such as loss of smell and constipation. We think that there are numerous environmental risk factors, including certain pesticides, air pollution, heavy metals, and chemicals like trichloroethylene that are contributing to its rise. If you look at rates of Parkinson's across the world, they're highest in the most industrialized parts of the world, such as the US and Western Europe, lowest in the least industrialized parts of the world, like Sub-Saharan Africa, and increasing most rapidly in the most rapidly industrializing parts of the world, such as China and India.
I understand there is a lot of research going on. Is progress being made?
Not sufficient progress is being made. There's research, but insufficient progress. In this century, in the 21st century, we've only had 3 new classes of medications approved for Parkinson's disease, and all of them only treat a subset of individuals with the disease. The most effective medicine for Parkinson's disease is called levodopa, and that was developed 50 years ago, and it doesn't treat the underlying pathology or symptoms of the disease, and it has its own side effects, so we need much more to be done.
What steps can people take in terms of prevention to slow down these increasing rates of Parkinson's disease?
There are numerous things we as a society can do, and there are things individuals can do to lower their risk. So I mentioned that there are certain pesticides that are linked to Parkinson's disease, one called Paraquat. It increases the risk of Parkinson's disease by 150%. More than 60 countries, including China, have banned the pesticide, which is reported to kill the weeds that Roundup can't, but the United States has not. In fact, use of Paraquat in the United States has more than doubled over the last 10 years. So we could join the rest of many other industrialized countries by banning Paraquat. There's another chemical called trichloroethylene that in the 1970s was used in everything from whiteout to decaffeinating coffee to degreasing engine parts, and is still widely used in the dry cleaning industry. It's linked to Parkinson's disease, and up to 8% of workers in the United Kingdom and likely similar number in the US have worked with this chemical, which increases the risk of Parkinson's disease. And then it's also the most common groundwater contaminant in the U.S., contaminating up to 30% of groundwater, and found in half of Superfund sites around the country and thousands of other sites.
So if I have someone I care about, someone in my family who has been diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, maybe recently, what advice would you offer?
We should enable anyone anywhere with Parkinson's disease in the U.S. to be able to receive the care that they need. Part of that's by increasing the number of Parkinson's specialists, but part of it's by using telemedicine, video visits to connect to patients directly in their home, and we need to expand those kinds of models so that people can receive care on their terms.
Dr. Ray Dorsey from the University of Rochester Medical Center, one of the co-authors of Ending Parkinson's Disease, A Prescription for Action. Dr. Dorsey, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And for InfoTrack, I'm Roy Mackey.
That wraps up another edition of InfoTrack. Our executive producer is Randy Meyer. And I'm your host, Chris Whitting, inviting you to join us next week for another edition of InfoTrack.
Stay informed with the latest news throughout Eau Claire and the entire Chippewa Valley on our sister station, 93.5 The Tap. James Kelly and the WCFW News team has what you need to know every hour, 24 hours a day. For the latest news, talk, and discussion on what's important to you, count on 93.5 The Tap and WCFW.FM. Valley's fun music. 105.7 CFW.
Thank you.
1057 CFW.
1057 CFW.
Thank you. McKay is back. Wake up with Mike McKay in the morning every weekday morning from 6 till 10 on CFW. Mike has your news and weather every hour and everything you need to know about the fun things happening throughout Eau Claire and the entire Chippewa Valley. Plus, Mike announces your birthday and anniversary shout-outs every morning at 8:15. Send them in through our Facebook or text us. It's easy to do with our free Civic Media app.
Listen in the morning and it'll keep you smiling all day.
Mike McKay in the morning on 105.7 CFW.
Chippewa Valley weather.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Some showers and storms around the area today. Outside of the rain, a mix of clouds and sunshine, highs in the lower 80s, or winds will be light. Tonight, partly cloudy, a few sprinkles, lows in the lower 60s, a few showers and storms around for your Monday. Right now, it's 67.
CFW.
And you can dance.
Music.
80s, 90s, and more. 105.7 CFW.
How can you see into my eyes like open doors, leading you down into my core, where I become so numb. Yeah.
1057 CFW, streaming 24/7 on the free Civic Media app.
Every time I look into your loving eyes, I see love that money just can't buy. One look from you, I drift away, I pray that you begin to understand. Everything about you tells me I'm your man. I live my life to be with you. No one can do the thing. Anything you want, you got it.